This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, July. It's our first show of July.
It is
the first show, right? Yeah, because Saturday was the first.
Okay.
Welcome to the Gareth Cliff Show. And so we're into the second half of 2017. No doubting that. Scientific fact. Uh-huh. Gareth, unfortunately, has a fever today. So he shall not be here today. He's feeling a little unwell. And he was showing signs of cracking end of last week, which just goes to show. And, I mean, people can call me antisocial all they want, but what did we learn from The Walking Dead?
Run away from zombies?
Okay, sort of. Essentially, yes, you're correct this year. When people are showing signs of illness, especially this time of year, do not get too close to them. Gareth, though, he's very social, outgoing. You know, there was allegations of people being ill around the studio, but still, he was just sharing meeting space with them.
Allegations.
Getting in social space with people.
This is nothing a few wet wipes and hand sanitizer can't solve.
I get that. Yeah. Sure. Anyway, so Gareth's not feeling too well today, and we wish him a speedy recovery. And sometimes you just need some time in bed, I guess.
Duvet day situation.
But what I don't know is, was he hitting it hard this weekend? Was he out partying?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know.
Wasn't there some girl coming into town this weekend?
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
Or like his friend or something.
Yeah, and she wanted to party really hard this coming weekend, and he was saying that he's not sure that he's up for it.
All right.
I don't know.
I think maybe he got up for it.
All I know is when I saw, and I directly quote from his message, this actually made me crack up a bit and I feel bad. The description of, I'm feeling like death warmed up. I've never heard that before. And actually, hey, really? If you're feeling sick, that's kind of apt, really. Death warmed up?
It's quite a common phrase of people of Gareth's generation.
I don't really know what it means.
Sorry.
Does it
Can
exactly.
we just it's pause like, on the moment?
Is it like if you were to put
Gareth's generation
death in a bowl and stick it in a microwave to warm it up? I mean, I don't really understand what the saying
well, it's,
means.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a pleasant thought. Why would you ever warm up death? And if you did, it wouldn't be much. The end result of warming up death, yeah.
Mm. This is how you think of Gareth's generation, yeah.
Yeah, so he's not with us, but hopefully back tomorrow. Amanda, you're here with us. You're in fine health.
I'm all good, all good.
Okay,
wait, hold up. Amanda, did you end up going clubbing this weekend?
I didn't, actually.
Ah, because you and Gareth were sort of also making plans last week.
Yes, that's it. You both are meant to be at Truth this weekend.
That's right, but Friday was a bit rough, so didn't do Truth. Like, the cousin sleepover turned into a bit of a mad sleepover.
Oh, what, did extra smuggle boys in, like we thought?
No, actually, she was very well behaved. But there was just like a lot of shooters and like, a lot of shooters.
So how many of you were there at this girl sleepover?
Well, it was like four of us and then my aunt and uncle.
Oh.
But like my aunt and uncle have been promising us since I was about 6 years old that we can sleep at their house. And they're always doing renovations and stuff. So now was finally
14 years of renovations. This house must look amazing.
It's ridiculous. So now it's finally done. So now they're like, you guys can sleep over and have a sleepover.
So, I mean, were your aunt and uncle involved in the shooters is what I want to know.
Well, my uncle had two shooters and he just passed out.
Yeah.
My aunt, who doesn't drink or anything, like, she was literally drinking, smoking herb, having a good time. So, then we were teaching them the game. So, like, Have You Ever, we played Have You Ever. And then Kings. So they were quite in shock with all the, like, questions we came up in the
So come Saturday morning, they both just declared that it'll be 14 more years until you have a sleepover.
Yeah, no, they were telling our parents, like, they're like, yo, these girls are entertaining, but we don't know, like, how soon it's going to happen again.
they've basically washed their hands of the entire situation now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny though, huh? So Sia, no one went to the Durban July this last weekend, huh?
No.
I think we, yeah. I mean,
no, none of these parts, yeah, no.
It's that beautiful time where South Africans get to do what they do best. Try to show the world how rich they aren't by showing how rich they are for a day.
Well, look, it's still love a party it. Every year regardless. And the who's who turn up and the sort of wants to be who also turn up.
Was Skolopat there?
And it happens. I don't know.
She was. From what I saw what over the weekend.
What did she wear?
I don't know what she wore, but I did see a headline that said that she was a lot more demure at this event than we usually see her in terms of her dress sense.
Oh, wow. Okay. She wore quite a frock.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, I thought. She looked really nice and calm.
See, ever since the interview she had here, she's changed her ways. Now she's this like...
One of the pictures on her Instagram, she captioned Queen's Hut because literally it looks like it's a gorgeous little brown and goldish number and looks like there's straw on it. So it looks like a traditional Zulu hut or something. Oh, well, hey.
So she's not showing her entire thigh?
No, we don't see any thigh, any... no-no region. We just see a lot of boobage.
No-no region.
Yeah, your no-no place.
Is it the middle area?
Yes. People shouldn't touch you in your no-no place, Ben.
It's a very good point. You should also show it on the red carpet. But hey, everyone evolves in a societal / celebrity way, I guess.
Hey, yeah. Just good on her for showing some boobage. Yeah, a lot of people went down there. And goodness, you're starting your month off on quite a note. So
wasn't French Montana also on the guest list?
Montana was in the country. Or is still in the country. He did some performances.
From what I heard, Mabala Noyes had flown him in for the
Mabala Noyes still a thing?
They have all the money in the world. They're definitely still a thing.
That now becomes... That's like the new thing with events like these. Every record company or big brand wants to have a marquee and they want to one-up each other. Then they... You know, there's these ridiculous prices to even get into the marquees. So it's like, oh, what can we do? Or, what drink can we serve? Or who will we have?
It's so true because when you see people who you hate, you want to impress during the day at the actual Durban July, it's always like, well, what tent are you in? And then you have to have a few wristbands on. You have to say, I'm going to this one. I don't know. I might go to that one as well. Yeah. If you've got no tents, you might as well just be barefoot walking home.
And what like, I love... Still, after all these years, the last thing that we bring up when we speak about an event of this stature is, oh, which horse won? Because what? Do we even care that it's a sporting event? Oh, well, as long as people were there and they got drunk and, hey, they rubbed shoulders with French Montana, right?
So French Montana's a rapper?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like a decent rapper or like 90s rapper?
No, not 90s.
He's relevant.
He's very much like a new age guy.
Well, that's very nice. So the weekend was nice and cold. Well, it's July. I mean, it's a really great thing. It dawned on me this morning that we are getting closer and closer to spring. I know that's nothing new to you, but like the idea that it's maybe not quite as cold, that it will be getting lighter, it's just amazing. But then it also made me think like, oh, it's just another sign that you're getting old. I mean, you get so excited about these little small things. And there it is, yeah. So to kind of remind you again, I found this really cool clip about what it means to be old. There's some pretty key things here, which I'm pretty sure you can relate with.
You know you're old when a $4 bottle of wine is no longer pretty good.
Sorry.
Order for you in my pants.
Where the hell did that come from?
Ew. What, Ben?
Sorry, let's try that again.
Take two.
You know you're old when a $4 bottle of wine is no longer pretty good. Oh my god. When you can't bend down without groaning. When you can't eat the same way you used to without suffering the consequences. That was like one bite. When you get excited every time someone cancels plans on you.
How true is that?
Relax.
When you originally thought you just looked tired, but after a while you realized that's just how you look now.
That is my life every Monday morning. Actually, most mornings.
No.
I think, I'm having a puffy week. I'm just not looking that great. No, that's you.
Friends are getting pregnant on purpose.
When you can never find your glasses.
Yeah, it's me. But they're on your head.
When it's Friday night and all you want to do is...
When you touch on the tip and nothing squirts out.
You know you're getting older when your uncle now feels comfortable telling sex jokes around you.
Are you serious? The party was lit.
Oh my God, did everyone get out okay?
Yeah, that was pretty much my weekend. I spent time looking for my glasses. I realized I looked like shit nowadays. I love the fact I had no plans. And then someone did actually cancel something. And I was like, oh, what a relief. Like, you know you're getting old when jokes aren't actually jokes anymore. They just hurt you.
So really, between you and Gareth, it's a race to see who's the oldest.
It's no race. Gareth won that a long time ago.
Oh, yeah. It's still Gareth's generation.
Yeah, look, at least I'm honest about stuff. Gareth will still make out like I'm the old person. Anyway, it's not about him. He's all here today. Mops, what did you get up to for the weekend?
Well,
please don't tell me you had to work.
I did. More and more of my weekends are occupied by the work that I do for this production company that I work for.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of work involved over the weekend. Yeah.
Because you also did some work last week. That's why you weren't here for a day.
Mm.
This is like exciting stuff.
Yeah. No, it's cool. Okay. I mean, you know, we're making TV. It's exciting.
Very nice.
And that was the full stop. Yeah. Hey, how did your counseling session with the friend go?
I couldn't because of work. I had to cancel.
Because I found myself in a similar situation this weekend. I was like, oh no, is this exactly what Mabel is going through as well? Where I just had to nod and throw in the occasional,
Who was the lucky person that had you as counsel?
Oh my goodness. Like, I was the unlucky one in the situation. So I found myself over at my sister's place over the weekend, and we were having like a... You know, there was some family over, there were some friends over as well. And this is one of my sister's friends. She's basically a very close family friend who we grew up with. But we hadn't seen her in a while because she was married and now she's just been divorced and she's going through a very, like, messy separation. So the divorce is finalized, but they still have to, like, split things like where does the child go, you know, on which days and who pays for this and, you know, all of that. So with, like... Always, she had some sort of glass with something in one hand and a cigarette in the other. And that's basically how she was walking around the entire place for the weekend. And then she was like, I was like, check, I don't need to know that, you know, your ex-husband is now 3 months bad or like has not been making school fees payment. Like, I don't need to know shit like that. I really don't. But you kind of need to pretend like you care and you kind of need to, you know, empathize with someone. But halfway through, I was just like, your cigarette is choking me. I can't breathe anymore. I need to leave.
But there's also like, I find you get into those situations, right? People take advantage. It's like, well, you know, they're doing the courteous thing. I'm going to run with this now. And they keep it about themselves.
Absolutely.
And then it makes one of those awkward situations where you now have massive resentment for this person. And then it goes towards hatred. So all
the person telling you their issues or the person they also hate?
Well, look, their hate for them it's not important to you.
Mm.
Your life will be okay. It's when these people just run with this whole guilt and sorry and, you know, oh, woe be me kind of story.
Oh, it does not work at all. It does not work at all. Because what I've realized is people like that don't even care about you or care whether you're really actively listening. They just need to know, is there someone with ears and a heartbeat? And that's it.
All they need to know is that they're in the middle of everything. They are the center of the universe, whether you care or not. You can see they're fasted. Because when you stop listening, they keep going. That's when people are just like, oh, whatever. Mm. It's totally about me.
So I arrived this Saturday afternoon. And all this mess had already begun since Friday night. And by the time I was coming in, trying to be Dr. Phil in the entire situation. I was like, well, and oh, by the way, she's also going.
That must have been a massive stretch for you, trying to be Dr. Phil.
This is so much, but she's also going for therapy. So she's now bringing all these philosophical terms about like, I am able to identify that I'm a needy person and I'm a relationship hopper. And I was like, ooh, that's very, you know, deep of you. What does that mean? And she goes, I just jump from relationship to relationship. And now that, you know, I've, you know, the marriage is over, I've now, you know, just,
sounds fine then.
Just jump straight into my friends, you know, for affection. But here's the thing. Here's the kicker. We wake up on Sunday morning and we realize that she had a little situation with my male cousin.
Oh, she hopped into this.
Just a proper hopation of the situation.
You know what? We all heal in different ways.
Oh, it was a proper rebound. So
is,
like,
sorry, is that legal? Or is that frowned upon by the church? I mean, what even is that?
They're both adults, so.
Yeah, why would it be illegal?
It's not like.
Sorry, I thought that was like your. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, not like related. A baby cousin or something. And okay. It's not incestuous either.
Right, sorry, I threw
that term around because, like, we've been, you know, she's been around our family since high school, you know, when my sisters and her were friends. So it was kind of weird, but I don't know. She hopped right into that, I guess. So.
Wowzers. All right. Well,
it is nasty. So nasty.
So over the weekend, I lost my, well, I wouldn't say I lost my final grandparent. I mean, my mom's mom passed away.
Oh, no.
Sorry. I don't mean this to be a morbid segue. All right.
I didn't know where this was going, but.
Well, it's, you know, you were telling a story. I'll tell a story. You know what? The rest of the show, someone else will tell a story. I think this is how the show works. We're going to tell some stories, right? So, my mom's mom passed away, but she was like, I mean, she had a good innings. Like, she was long into life, you know? And so now I officially have no grandparents. But, like...
How old was she?
So, yeah, I can't tell you.
Way past 80, 90?
Yeah, I mean, she was definitely north of 80.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very bad with these kind of things. I mean, my niece and nephew are very current, and I probably wouldn't be able to get their net like 14 and 10, I think. Anyway, not important. So that, I was like... when people die, whether it's like a tragedy, whether it's expected, like death is death, okay? Mm. And as humans, we are quite sentimental beings and we'll always think about things a certain way. It's like, I never had grandparents in my life. My parents immigrated when I was, well, before I was born. So they grew up in England. They moved here. They moved here with two kids, my sister and oldest brother. And then while they were here, they had my older brother and me.
Mm-hmm.
It's four of us and the siblings, right? So I never had grandparents around because all my family was over in England, and I maybe saw them. I mean, I never got to meet my dad's dad because he passed away before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's mom I probably saw maybe three times in my life, and then my mom's parents I saw more of, but also tops like three times, right? So you're not overly sad because you don't see people all the time, but then you're kind of sad because it's like obviously you think about your parents and they've lost a parent, and then you put it back to where you are and you think you'd be devastated if that happened to you.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking to myself, am I just really insensitive and am I just so cold and emotionless that I don't get upset about anything and nothing really grabs me? Well, I thought, no, I kind of like look at fond memories of my nan. Okay. So the last time I saw her was the year 2000.
17 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
Long time ago, right? Because since you know, she got to a certain age where she wasn't traveling, I didn't go back to England. It just happened. Okay?
Yeah.
But I always remember this clip from Family Guy. Basically, this is my last sort of memories of her. So every year at Christmas, what we'd do is we'd have to phone England. So we're all around and sitting around having Christmas Eve.
Sweet.
And we'd have a phone call, but it would always be so awkward. Like every year without fail. And it would pretty much go like this every year.
Hello?
Hi, Aunt Helen. It's Peter, Lois, and the whole family. We're calling to
Peter
say Merry
Lois,
Christmas.
What?
We were just calling to...
Here?
I hope you
we
got our
quite
card.
A whole stack here.
Okay, nobody talk. We'll just wait for her to talk. Well, we just
Are
wanted
you still
to...
There, dear?
Damn it. So how
it's
was the...
It's rather cold. The pond froze over a family of raccoons.
All right,
and
well, Merry Christmas.
It would always be like that. You would talk, and then she would talk, and then they would talk, and you're like, screw it.
It's funny because it's so true.
But it kind of is. So, you know, like, I'm really sad, and I know my mom, you know, like, you expect this day to come. She was 90, by the way. You expect these things to happen in life, but you know when it does, you still don't know how to react. So I'm sure she's feeling very sad. And that's, when you lose someone that was so important to your life, it will happen. But I always just go straight to the good points when I lose someone in my life, which has happened maybe more than I care about. But you always think about the good times. And I always think, like, the dynamic of grandparents in life, you know, it's such a strange thing across the board. Everyone's got different experiences. For me, geographically, it was always going to be different. I never, ever got to see my grandparents, essentially. But I always remember that. And I always remember, like, really good times. And, you know, when I think about my mom's parents, that's where I got the golf from, which is a good thing.
Oh.
Because her dad played golf. And I'm the most slender of my family. And then I look at my mom's parents, and they were also very slender.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was... It's kind of sad, but again, it's like, well, you know, that's just another chapter in life, and now we move on.
Yeah, it's the way it is. And you're a product of your environment, though, so you aren't this emotionless, insensitive something or the other. That's just the way...
Yeah, look, to a certain degree, I think I am. Maybe I'm just emotionally clinical, whatever those things are, but...
Emotionally clinical.
So that was kind of sad. Like, you know, and then it dawns on you, like, I now have no grandparents, even though it wasn't really a big part of my life, but, like, that's it now. That's, like, a reality.
Yeah.
Again, ties back to you getting old.
So what happens with the whole funeral arrangement?
I'm not sure. I was going to give my mom a call today.
Because she was in England, right?
Yeah, so my mom would go basically overseas like every year, go see her. She was in a home at this stage, so, you know, be a bit like The Notebook. Some days she would recognize you, some days she wouldn't. So yeah, I guess that's just the next thing that she'll take on. But next week, I'm not here, guys. So I thought I'd let you know that right now. The whole of next week, I'm not here.
So you'll be in England?
I won't be in England, no. We're having a family holiday to the Transkei.
Oh. But
I'm letting you know now so that you don't get really sad. This time next week, I'm not here.
To know how to deal with it appropriately.
Giving you a working week.
Got you.
Okay. Right. So otherwise, yeah, what is going on in the show today? Of course, Gareth will, if you just joined us, Gareth is not here. He's got a bad fever.
Yes.
So you can send well wishes to him if you wish, but he'll not be here today. How's the rest of the show look?
We have our Monday regulars. So Anthea's coming in with an extended edition of The Money Shot. We have Rich Mulholland as well as giving us a reality check this week. And also our 8 a.m. guest is someone who has a long, interesting story to tell. His name is Aubrey Sekabi, and he's the director of Marikana the Musical. Now, the first time I heard about this, I even raised my eyebrow, like, what is this? What is going on?
Cool. So we're interviewing Aubrey about that at 8.
Yes. But you dig deep into his story and you realize that he's been a playwright involved in theater and big productions for years, which have the strong historical and South African significance. And, you know, he's done major things like writing and directing the Nelson Mandela Memorial Service as well. So he does work that is massive and has big impact. So we'll find out more about him.
Yeah, so you don't want to miss that. We're going to interview Aubrey about things. I mean, that takes some vision here. It also takes a bit of courage.
Yes, and there's also absolutely no room to drop the ball and fail
when you
are directing the funeral service of the late Nelson Mandela.
Exactly. I mean,
feel about this? Sign language interpreter.
These are pretty tough things to kind of take on, because if you get anything wrong, you're going to be absolutely crucified. And even if you get it right, people are going to have different sort of interpretations of how things were.
But even when you look at right now, the production that he's working on, Marikana the Musical, he's worked on the story of Solomon Mahlangu, he's worked on a production around the Rivonia trial. These are things that are about people. And so, of course, someone who lost a family member in Marikana might be upset by this, or they might not appreciate, you know, someone, you know, making money off this. You know, where's the line?
Sure.
What sort of responsibility does he hold?
So, you know, I don't mean to make light of any of these things, but many stages of the year, South Africa does appear like a musical. So Aubrey's making the most of this. Huh? Jesus. Of course, it was a big weekend for news. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes at Mubs. But yeah, the ANC policy thingy was still going on, which essentially was just like the Durban July without the horses, from what I gather. There was there was some really bad things happening in England. I hope this doesn't become a trend. These acid attacks seem to be some sort of retaliation towards the so-called, you know, the Muslim terrorist attacks, those kind of things. There was another fire in a London building block.
Ugh.
Oh, jeepers, there were some things, huh? Anyway, before we get to the news, there's something I want to play here very quickly so I don't forget about later. Mm-hmm. You know, we often talk about facts and feelings and that kind of stuff in the show, and why people take certain sides towards certain things. Well, finally, I think we've got some evidence as to why people are the way they are on Earth.
If you've spent any time on Earth, you might have noticed that humans are not the most rational of creatures. We make decisions based mostly on emotions instead of facts, and a lot of times we're guided by tribal instinct. Part of the problem is that the human brain evolved to help us survive, and not necessarily to help us be factually accurate. So we often respond better to social and tribal dynamics than to intellectual analysis. For example, if someone's tribe believes that Obama is a secret Muslim born in Kenya, that person probably thinks the hard proof of his US birth certificate is fake. That conclusion is neither rational nor accurate. But from a tribal perspective, it makes sense. It's safer to agree with your tribe and stay united ideologically, even if you're wrong about the facts, than to disagree and isolate yourself. Another part of the problem is that our brain is constantly protecting our worldview and sense of identity. So when our worldview is challenged, that same part of the brain that processes physical danger gets activated. This is why people sometimes react so aggressively to information that proves them wrong. And this is why it's often so hard to have an intelligent political debate. Several studies have also shown that there is a backfire effect that happens when people encounter facts that contradict their current beliefs. They actually become more convinced of their original ideas. So fighting ignorance with facts is like fighting a grease fire with water. It seems like it should work, but it actually just makes the whole thing worse. Lastly, there's the problem of lack of empathy. Several studies have found that when humans are divided into groups of any kind, we instinctively become less empathetic to members of other groups. That means that for survival's sake, we might instinctively empathize less with other races, other nationalities, and even other sports teams. This instinctive dehumanization of other groups is what makes things like slavery and genocide possible in our society. So, what can you do? If you want someone to consider factual information that clashes with their beliefs, first, you have to prevent their brain from seeing you as a personal threat. So, look for ways to identify the person as part of your tribe and you as part of theirs. Hey, we're part of the same family. Hey, we're both parents. Hey, we both still play Pokemon Go. Whatever. Anything that communicates that you're part of the same tribe. That's the first step. Second, consider the possibility that you may be wrong. Maybe the facts are not on your side. In which case, admitting it will help you model to the other person that it's okay to be wrong. I understand that none of this is easy or smooth, but if we want to continue to function as a stable society, we have to learn to get past our own natural biases. Only when that happens, we will be able to move forward towards a better future. Peace.
How about that to start your week, huh?
I recognize a lot of those points raised from when Mbalin Jomani came in and did that series with us of How to Argue Better.
Yeah, that was a good series.
Yeah.
We should look into having her again. Anyway, it is Monday. It is 6:30 in the morning here in South Africa. It is dark, but if you listen to a podcast, it could be sunny somewhere. Anyway, regardless of that, it is the news of Mbali, and that is brought to you by Kolkakia Pizzeria. It is Monday, so Kolkakia means 2-for-1 in your language. Buy a gourmet pizza and get another gourmet pizza of a lesser value or the same value absolutely free. That sounds like an absolute win. What else is going on, Mubs?
Well, our own Justice Malala would have been part of the 1,500 journalists that all went to cover the ANC policy conference.
They all go.
They all went, Ben. It's kind of their job, so I guess they had to do it. Justice didn't really seem, you know, to be very excited about the whole thing. And as was predicted by him, it's all rather boring stuff, really. Same rhetoric. Same blah, blah, blah. But yeah, just a quick wrap of what happened over the weekend. So it is ANC's fifth policy conference. It is still underway at the Nasrec Expo Center in Johannesburg. The conference started on Friday and will continue until Wednesday this week. It is a gathering of about 3,500 delegates from branches across the country. And what they're aiming to do is to discuss the party's policies going into the elective conference in December, where changes and new policies will be ratified. A new ANC president will also then be voted into the party. During the opening of the conference, President Jacob Zuma took an opportunity to lash out at opposition parties for continuously challenging government decisions in court. The president has a big problem with this, adding that it goes against his understanding of democracy.
Oh, right, yeah, because his understandings are always very well balanced.
Well, his understandings are always right, Ben, which is where you fail to
see. Why do I keep forgetting that?
I'm just here to remind you that the president is always right. I have never seen such democracy, Zuma said. I think these are matters we need to discuss very seriously as the ANC because it is counter to democracy. He complained about the fact that whenever the opposition parties were defeated in parliament, where the ANC has majority, they quickly run to the courts, where the courts don't have a majority of any kind. So the president has taken exception to that.
I always find when he takes exception to things, we get a true understanding of what he really thinks, and it is a worrying thought.
Well, I suppose.
He often refers to this being a strange democracy, never since democracy. What is his understanding of democracy?
Look, I don't know what the president's understanding of democracy is, but I think that, you know, the man has a strategy in play that he needs to stick to, and he's going to do that at whatever cost. So the party secretary general, Gwede Mantashe, has criticized the party's leaders for trying to dismiss allegations around state capture by the politically connected Gupta family. How dare you? Mantashe said on Friday that a narrative was developed to link any discomfort with the influence of the Gupta family to the regime change agenda. He admitted that the series of those leaked emails indicating the extent of the family's influence on the executive and state-owned entities are harming the party. Aww. And he demanded that those implicated must own up. So, as I said, same rhetoric coming out of the fifth policy conference, which will continue up until Wednesday this week. And I'm sure that by Thursday, when Justice joins us, man oh man, will he have a lot to say in reaction to the policy conference. Right. Now, the date for the motion of no confidence in the president has been changed. It's been pushed back by a few days. Last week, Parliament had scheduled the vote to take place on the 3rd of August, 2017, but now it's going to only happen on the 8th of August. According to a statement, there was an oversight during the initial consultations and determination of the originally announced date, which overlooked the fact that a cabinet lekgotla had already been set for that week, so it's a scheduling issue. Political parties still have until the 14th of this month to submit their views on whether the vote should happen in secret, and then the Speaker, Baleka Mbete, will make her decision regarding the appropriate voting procedure. Remember that last month the Constitutional Court ruled that, you know, the Speaker is actually empowered to allow for a secret ballot, so I suppose more deliberations need to take place before she actually makes her decision. But, you know, as far as our police minister, Fikile Mbalula, is concerned, who is also an ANC National Executive Committee member, he says that party members who support a motion of no confidence in the president risk being disciplined by the party.
So, do as I say, basically.
Essentially, yeah. Opposition members of parliament have called on the speaker to allow parliamentarians to vote in secret. And then Police Minister Fikile Mbalula just reminding those who needed to be reminded that, well, if you go against the party, you will be disciplined. You will be shut out in the cold. No more benefits for you. Sorry, I just added those extra bits. That's not exactly what the police minister said.
That sounded like something he would say.
But, I mean, it must be tough considering what happens after you get shut out by the ANC. Where do you go? What do you do?
Do you start your own party?
No.
I mean, look, that's obviously if you're really ambitious and have some between your ears, but it's a genuine concern. And now we know when these people get brought to heel so quickly, it's exactly that. They say...
That is it. Because they're done for afterwards.
Exactly. Like, oh, right, you like your side chicks and you like your plush cars and that kind of stuff. Well, that's all gone if you vote against me. Simple as that.
Well, you see, that's the thing. It's akin to marrying a wealthy spouse. Mm. And then when they threaten to cut off the money supply that you're in there for, you know, you sit back and you reevaluate your priorities and you think, well, what's more important? Is it more important for me to keep getting this money or to have peace of mind?
Yeah. Is it morals or livelihood?
Exactly. Exactly. And for some people, morals don't pay the bills. Well, in fact, for any of us, morals don't pay the bills.
Yeah, I don't pay tax on my morals. I don't bank my morals.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes. And then lastly, Arab nations have extended a deadline early today for Qatar to respond to their list of demands in a diplomatic crisis, essentially, that's unfolding in the Gulf. They're saying that Kuwait's Emir requested the delay as part of his efforts to mediate the dispute. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Egypt, and Bahrain have cut ties with the 2022 FIFA World Cup host. They have restricted access to their airspace and ports, and they're also sealing Qatar's only land border, which it shares with Saudi Arabia. Essentially, their concern here is that, you know, Qatar are being accused of supporting extremists. There are also concerns over how it maintains its ties to Shiite power Iran. So, you know, all these countries that I've just listed have kind of banded together and are essentially trying to throw Qatar out into the cold.
I don't know. It still sounds like Joseph Fritzl accusing his neighbor of child abuse.
They issued a 13-point list of demands to end the standoff on June the 22nd and gave the natural gas-rich country 10 days to comply. That deadline wasn't meant. It was meant to expire yesterday, but they have now extended the deadline to 48 hours. They're basically pushing Qatar into a corner here to say, hey, meet our demands or else.
Yeah, or else, huh?
Or else what?
Right, the news this morning on the Monday was brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. It is 2-for-1 Monday, so take advantage of that. A message from Rusty saying, guys, I'm going to be blaming Cliff Central if I go broke in the next few days. I finally tried Colcacchio's yesterday. I was stoned out of my bracket and craved pizza. There's various reasons to crave pizza.
Stoned out of your bracket.
So we ended up eating 4 pizzas from there, two bottles of their homemade sangria. Jesus fucking Christ. I did not expect this quality of dining experience. Yum. Well, Rusty, that sounds like a great day out.
Yeah.
Which you can have at any stage. Various Colcacchio pizzerias around the country. Getting back to earlier a comment before we get into the sports. Ashley says, death warmed up. It's pretty simple. Dead body's ice cold. Warm it up a little. And that's about as alive as Gareth feels this morning. Yeah. And some messages from Dubai where it's already 8:30 and 40 degrees. Thanks for that, Vaughn. Sweaty bollocks all day there. Oh. Right, into the sports. Well, Sia festers over that image. It was an interesting weekend of sports. We've got to start with the big story, which was the rugby. Sonny Bill Williams got the first red card for the All Blacks in over 50 years, which goes to show that referees just love these guys. Absolute horseshit. These guys have been getting away with cheap shots for so long. Finally, a red card gets thrown out to one of their players. Sonny Bill basically tried to murder this man on the field. Okay, maybe it's a bit harsh. He basically ran into his head with his shoulder. It was just a terrible, terrible lack of concentration. The guy went down for the Lions, their winger, forget his name now. So after 25 minutes, the All Blacks had 14 players in the field, which eventually then made everything go towards the Lions. Even though the fact the Lions had not capitalized on this, they were sloppy in discipline, sloppy in all kinds of factors of play. But then towards the later stages of the match, they finally got the numerical advantage to work in their favor. And even though Marco Vunipulo got sent to the cooler for 10 minutes for yellow card infringements, the Lions won 24-21 in a rain-soaked, pretty drab, piss-poor event. But, you know, because it's got so much meaning, this whole British and Irish Lions test series, a game that would be seen by neutrals as being very boring, or to people who maybe don't care too much about rugby, it was very, very exciting. So that all goes down now to the third and final test. It'll play this Saturday, 9:35 South African time. It'll be in Auckland at Eden Park. And it's great that there's a decider in the series, but ultimately, as long as there's no rain and New Zealand have 15 players in the field, look for this to be 15 plus again on the points margin. Because New Zealand are just a much better side. I mean, they still only lost by 3 points with all of the factors going against them on Saturday. In Super Rugby news, that got back on track. And the Sunwolves, well, after this match, Nick Mallett suggested that Japan is not taking Super Rugby very seriously. Now you'd think, well, that's a bit harsh, but the Lions beat the Sunwolves 94-7. Now, if you're new to rugby, that is what's called a thrashing. 94 points in a rugby match. Bear in mind, there's only 80 minutes of play, right? So that's more than a point a minute.
Jeepers!
These guys missed over, I think, 50-something tackles. Granted, the Sunwolves didn't have their best team, but the Lions, they ended up with a flank playing wing and a scrum half playing fly half. They were resting their players towards the second half, but they were just running it in like it was a touch rugby match you play with your mates on the weekend. 94-7. It's just terrible. Mm. Absolutely terrible.
Do you give up at a point like that?
Well, look.
Kudos for the team for sticking it through the whole time, because I'd be like, done.
Yeah, as they were saying on Supersport at halftime, the biggest moment of the match was when Sunwolves actually came out to play the second half because they're being so absolutely hammered. Yeah, it was absolute carnage. And it's not good for the tournament because the Sunwolves are there to stay, right? So we all know the Kings and the Cheetahs are basically going to get chopped. and an Aussie team as well. But the Sunwolves, they're here. Like, their preseason training this year was just, it was a joke. Where most teams, like, practice for a couple of months, they get in great shape. These guys got together a few weeks before. There was none of these big profile warm-up matches that other teams go through. The Sunwolves just were like, well, we had a play, let's go, let's do it. So it was only a matter of time until someone takes 100 points in this competition, and the Sunwolves came bloody close. 94-7, they lost that one. The Cheetahs versus the Stormers, as predicted, it was a very open, free-flowing affair. Stormers winning that one 40 points to 34. It was marred a little towards the end with two red cards, one for either side. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't exactly a huge affair. And then the Kings, go on the Kings. They beat the Jaguares 31-30 in Argentina. Huge result that is, and the Kings are showing such great momentum. Momentum which they'll take into another tournament because they won't be in Super Rugby next year. And then Friday's match, kind of as expected, the Bulls took on a slightly weakened Sharks team without their box in the forward pack. But the Bulls were bloody good. Jan Serfontein at the moment is just unstoppable. He was just a different level, and a lot of his good play ended up with Warwick Gallant getting a hat-trick, so the Bulls winning that one 30-17. But a lot of the matches of the weekend meant absolutely squat nothing, because the Sharks are always going to qualify as a wild card in the SA group. The Stormers, no matter what happens, they've won their conference. The Bulls can't do anything. The Lions, they were the only game of importance, really, because they are trying to get the top of the log and basically trump the Crusaders, who, if they slip up once, the Lions will basically win through. In crickets, well, the women Proteas team, how about this for a result? They played against the West Indies yesterday, right? And this is part of the whole World Cup. The West Indies were bowled out for 48 runs. So the Lions as a rugby team scored 94 points. The West Indian women team could only score 48 runs. Now, Danae Fanikook, who's the captain of the women's Proteas team, she took four wickets without conceding a single run. Absolutely ridiculous. And then the Lady Proteas, they just absolutely blitzed it from there. They just scored those runs and I think just over six overs. So a huge win for them. But I tell you who is losing right now in cricket, it is Australia. That whole player dispute over pay, well, it's just going from bad to worse. And as always, the people who are representing the unions, representing the players, they have no idea about the big picture of what's happening in cricket. And there's still no resolution. There's pay struggles. But it could be that the Aussies, well, essentially they are unemployed right now because they have no contracts in place. But it's just going from bad to worse. In cricket, it's a good warm-up match for the Proteas ahead of this week's first test at Lord's against England. All the major batsmen kind of got a good run there. Tennis De Bruyne, unfortunately, he got a duck. And Dean Algar got five. But the rest of them, all in the runs. Hannah Kun got 80. Amla got 91. Dumini got 25, which is a lot for him. Bavuma got 85, and Quinton de Kock got 51. Only concerning thing is that the bowlers, well, it took 43 overs for them to get a wicket at one stage, bowling against the English Lions team. And what made it even more embarrassing, that Gary Balance was at the crease while this happened. Gary Balance, the ex-Zimbabwean, is crap. And he's in and out of this team, and, well, you can't take him too seriously. But the fact that our bowlers could not dislodge a man of this quality, well, doesn't say much, although Sharf Langerfeld, the Proteas bowling coach, did gloss over this by saying it was a satisfactory performance. Fernando Philander will be fit for this weekend's test match, so that is good news. Bad news for Bafana Bafana. Well, they were Bafana Bafana of old. They went down 1-0 to Tanzania, and they lost in the first sort of chance of getting anywhere in the COSAFA Cup. It was the quarterfinals. Boo-hoo, that's not a very good result. Germany's second team beat Chile in the Confed Cup. It's just amazing how Germany can send a team to this really big international tournament without anybody over the age of 30. No one. Zilch, nobody. Number one team, ranked team in the world, they beat Chile 1-0. And that's just going very well towards their big title defense of the World Cup, which will take place next year. There is a lot more sports, but Anthea is sitting in front of me, so I shall not elaborate on how disgraced former FIFA president Sepp Blatter wished he stepped down earlier. Could be fake news. Could be right. Either way, why does anyone care what this fat old corrupt boss has got to say nowadays? His time is done. His time is done. But Anthea, your time has just begun.
Oh, segue.
Ah, how about that, huh? More sport tomorrow. You're not getting old. You're not getting, like, tired of the theme.
Did you just ask me if I'm not getting old?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry, I've got old in my brain for the show. What I was going to say is, are you not getting tired of this theme tune?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of us are. All right, Anthea, what's going on in the finance?
Yeah, so on Friday, the market closed about 0.5% higher. So for the month of June, the index was down only, in inverted commas, 2.5%. The last couple of days, we had a nice little rally, which saved us. Obviously not enough, though. And then on Friday, because of the weaker rand, dual listeds had a little run. The rand completely blew out on Friday afternoon at about 3:30, just after the announcement that the date for the vote of no confidence had been set. It's a bit strange. I would have thought that actually, having set the date for the vote of no confidence, the rand would be stronger, but it didn't. It actually got weaker. So it traded from 12.99 to 13.12. I mean, there was also a Reuters article later on in the day saying that the finance minister had said South Africa may have to go to the IMF to borrow money, which really just proves that we are in junk status, I'm afraid. You can see the
I'm pretty
IMF,
sure I could have told you that.
So you can see the IMF as basically being the lender of last resort. And the real problem here, Ben, is that not just do we have to, can we not go to capital markets and to foreigners to raise money? If we're going to the IMF, it means we're desperate. And I think the finance minister mustn't forget that it's not free. The other concern, of course, is that we can go and borrow money, but it doesn't feel like he has a plan to get us out of this huge spiraling debt that we're in.
It's like opening an Edgar's account because you want cheap fashion, but you have no interest in paying it back.
A little bit. And then
I know
going
it's a very
to,
basic mindset.
And then
I mean,
going to Truworths and opening another account and then going somewhere else, opening another account. That really is what it's like.
Can I just ask a question here? Does the IMF ever reject applications for loans? It seems to me like at some point they need to get to that stage where they say, listen, South Africa, we can't give you any credit right now.
Absolutely they do, but we're not at that stage. I mean, the IMF are the people who bail out Zimbabwe, Mozambique. So in fact, I wouldn't have even thought South Africa was there yet.
Okay.
What's interesting about it, of course, or worse, the like kind of cherry on top, was that they also said on Saturday that they will bail SAA out to the tune of 2.3 billion rand now.
2.3 billion. Oh.
SAA is losing 370 million rand a month.
The problem. It's not losing due to me anytime soon, is it?
Yeah, could trim a bit of fat there, right? So the problem with SAA is that at the end of June, they had a loan with Standard Chartered, the UK bank, and Standard Chartered actually refused to renew their loan and said, okay, enough, sorry, SAA, we don't trust that you can afford to repay us, and so we want our money, and that's it. We're not extending credit to you anymore. It was done under something called a Section 16 of the Public Finances Act, which almost covers emergencies, so think bank bailouts. And I mean, when you think of bank bailouts, you generally think of something that is a systemic risk, and I don't think SAA... is SAA systemic risk? I don't know. I would... Aren't you just tempted to privatize this?
But it would seem to me that you don't really have a choice but to bail them out.
Well, that's my question.
Because what happens
Which
as a country...
Which is probably their mindset, yeah.
Well, no, but I mean, what would happen as a country we didn't have an airline running?
So what would happen in this case probably is that you'd go outside and say, who wants to buy SAA and turn it around?
Okay.
It could be South Africans saying, right, we'll privatize it, or it could be foreigners. I mean, I don't know why the government sees your airline as a strategic public holding or government holding.
I guess there's
holding.
A fair amount of ego involved.
That's a lot of monetary. That's a lot of value on ego. I mean, wow. So they also have 9 billion rand maturing at the end of June for about 6 to 7 lenders. So it did I say million? Because I meant billion. 9 billion
no, you
rand.
Said billion.
Didn't I? Okay. And they're obviously having to negotiate with these lenders whether or not they will extend their loan. And the question, of course, is can SAA pay salaries every month? You know that our public debt, like the money South Africa owes, is already 2.2 trillion rand.
You can't repay trillions.
I can't even like
Nobody
imagine
knows,
the
right?
number of zeros that is.
What a yes is. I'm just trying to imagine how much are you paying back per month?
Oh goodness.
Can you imagine like what the interest on trillions is? That's prison, basically. Financial prison.
Oh, yeah. Now, after all the things we've just discussed.
Is that 12 zeros, Anthea? Mm-hmm. 12 zeros.
Madam. After all of that, the finance minister said on Saturday that the decision to bail out SAA was to inspire confidence.
No.
Does that help you?
No.
Shall we move on?
It confuses me as well.
The person who said that know what confidence means?
Ben, he is reading from a pre-prepared script. He has to stick to the script.
Do you know, I wonder about that. Because if you're writing something like that, surely you've thought about it. It's not like an off-the-cuff, oh, and then afterwards you think, oh, maybe that's not what I meant. Mm. It's, if you're reading a script, somebody has actually thought about that. That makes it worse, not better.
Mm-hmm. Is anyone actually keeping a scorecard of how many bailouts this is now? Because it seems like an annual thing. I mean, is there a party attached to this where they just pop bottles and they go, yay, bailout party? Because it seems like an annual thing almost.
I used to know the number. I'll look it up, but it's a big number.
And when it is, there seems to be a B. There's, bailout's not the only B word here. Billions is very much involved.
And 20 billion comes to mind, but I'll have to check. I think that's the tune of the government guarantees for SAA, 20 billion. I think we need to move on, really, because this is depressing. And then oil had a bit of a bounce last week. The U.S. production numbers were slightly lower than expected. According to Bloomberg, open short contracts on oil are the highest level since 2012. And I'm saying 2012 because my Bloomberg machine didn't go further back than that. You know, we're getting a petrol price decrease on Wednesday of 69 cents a litre.
Yeah.
Which is exciting because this could bring inflation below 5%. And if that happens, then I think the Reserve Bank really just has more reason to cut interest rates. Consensus is that they'll cut it the first quarter of next year. But if it falls below 5%, inflation falls below 5%, I think we might make a good case for an earlier rate cut. But just on this oil price. Unfortunately now, the reason we're getting this petrol price decrease is because oil's been so low. And because the rand's been strong, except now, with these open short contracts on oil, my concern is that there might be a short squeeze. So what happens when traders are short and the market bounces a little bit, but the traders lose money and they have to buy back their short contracts, and it's almost self-fulfilling and continually pushes the oil price up. On top of that, the rand is now above 13 to the dollar. So maybe, go with this. Decreased petrol price, but just be wary of it.
Well, it always feels like, you know, you get given with one hand, but the other hand's ready to take. So
isn't it just, eh?
It's like one of those, yeah. It's like being in an abusive relationship, but you just don't get clapped on that day.
Wow. Yeah, so this month we're not going to get clapped.
Yay!
And then on Friday, Naspers said that they'd raised R1 billion through a bond issue through its international arm, Myriad International, and that was to repay some of the debt which was due at the end of July. Look how good Naspers are. Like, they raise money ahead of the maturity of their bonds. They don't wait until the last minute.
Yeah, Naspers should actually run more in this country. They seem to have an understanding about what money is.
They're already worth a fifth of the stock market, so...
But they need to make strategic decisions around normal life.
Take over treasury.
Yeah.
Is what you're implying. Naspers are also, they've said they're also going to use some of that money for acquisitions. They, of course, haven't told us what, but... And the reason they could do it through Myriad is because Naspers, in fact, was stood fully and unconditionally guaranteeing the bond. So that's quite nice, and I think we might see some more shopping going on at Naspers.
Yeah, it's interesting to know, because when you're that good, you can actually acquire many things of interest. And we've already seen it with them globally.
Yeah, exactly. And it's how they turn it around and how they make money out of it. So up until now, one of the issues is they've been consistently buying, and they're only recently beginning to sell off the assets that they had bought, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe. And it's interesting to see how much profit they're going to make on it, because you never really know how to value these things, especially if they're not listed. You know, you can guesstimate and net asset value, but it's always difficult if their purchases, their assets are unlisted.
Imagine they took on SAA.
I don't think they want SAA.
Oh, no, I don't think many people want SAA. I mean, I can agree with you on that. But if they were to take it on...
Maybe turn it around.
Yeah, okay, like you said, we must move on for that. It's depressing.
Sure. Maybe we should put a call to Richard Branson.
Well, you know what, Anthony, just or to go Qatar. Back, just go back to, yeah, so the UAE, right? Look how they structure their airlines. It's very much government funded, all that kind of stuff, but they use it to drive a lot. So it's tourism. I mean, Emirates, like, it's an airline, but there's so much more. It's like it's a gateway to great business, I think, this airline thing.
I'm actually, like, the Middle East airlines, yeah, they are good, but don't forget the oil is subsidized, and petrol is usually, or oil, whatever it is,
usually
a huge contributor to costs. Actually, a good example is Ethiopian Airlines, because they're now the largest airline in Africa, and they've gone from nothing to
Turkish Airlines as well. They've done a lot for that region and their country, and establishing themselves as this, like, European kind of Middle Eastern hub.
Do you think South Africa's just aren't too far down the continent, too far south?
Well, no. If we had things coming to, it's fine.
No, good point. We just run it badly.
Exactly. That's
we've got everything we need here. It's just bad running. That's all it is.
It's sad. I mean, because we are the business hub, right?
We're. So,
No, I do still think that foreigners come to South Africa to do business into Africa.
Sure.
So that's still a benefit we should be capitalizing on.
Exactly. There we go. Slogan there. Now just do good business and everything's sorted.
Okay. Shall we talk about Nike?
Yeah. Not my favorite brand, but then again, carry on.
Oh.
Why is it not your favorite brand?
They always sponsor douches. Let's be honest. All their major athletes. Because that's their whole angle, right? They're edgy.
Oh, get douche.
name a few.
you do one name and shame.
We haven't got enough time. I've written articles about this before.
Oh, right.
But we haven't got enough time for me to get into this. It's not about me. You carry on.
So Nike reported an excellent set of results last week for their fourth quarter, but that was just after Bloomberg TV ran a story saying that not even Tiger Woods could make golf profitable for Nike. So basically, Phil Knight, the guy who founded or co-founded Nike, said that for 20 years, they've been losing money on golf equipment.
Yeah, see, it's the whole hardware thing. So So Adidas have golf's biggest brand, TaylorMade, right? They've been trying to flog that for so long now. It's the biggest hardware manufacturer, but they wanted to sell it. They eventually have sold it now. It's just that it's not a great business. The profit margins are low down. It's not great. That's why they're all sticking with just apparel. So Nike's whole thing is now they're just making the golf side of apparel.
Right. So only the clothing. Oh, right.
So you'll still see Nike hectically in golf as far as sponsor loads of players, but the hardware.
Is that where the problem lies?
No margin.
It's not so much the branding, because Phil Knight also went on TV and said that when they banned, you know, the Jordan Air trainers from the basketball league, that's when they made the biggest boost in sales, because basically they went out and said their slogan was Nike Airs or Jordan Airs, whatever it is, now banned by the league. And apparently that boosted sales. So I think Nike is all about branding, no?
Very much so. Well, it's one of the most, it is probably the most iconic icon, brand slash whatever, swoosh thing. You see that, everyone knows what it is.
And so that's why they're equating or questioning this, like, brand, or this use of Tiger Woods for their golf equipment. But it's not, but you say it's not the branding issue, it's actually the hardware.
No, it's just, it's an industry thing. I don't even think, I mean, look, obviously Tiger not following through on the legacy which should have been his, and all the adultery and that kind of stuff didn't help. And yeah, Tiger was the only one that could keep that brand afloat. He doesn't play then.
But even before he fell, they didn't still make wasn't money. Yeah, so it's pointless. Anyway, so they reported diluted earnings per share grew by 16% year on year, beating estimates by 20%. I mean, just fantastic. Their direct-to-customer business grew 18% year-on-year, now represents 40% of the total revenue. So they really are changing from becoming this wholesaler to becoming direct-to-consumer. Golf revenues, they said, continue to be depressed. Japan was the best performer by a long way, while Eastern Europe actually moved backwards, even in constant currency terms. So it wasn't so much a problem that the Russian ruble was under pressure, but actually just generally. And then still very strong momentum in China, where revenue grew in constant currency by 17%. Nike shares were up 11% on Friday. Yeah, so really good stuff coming out of there. I mean, You know, whether or not we want to hold the share going forward is a good question. I expect after such good results, you'll see lots of forecast upgrades, which will keep the share afloat. And even after the gain, it's on about a 21 times 12-month forward earnings. So not cheap, slightly below the long-term average. I'm not sure there's that much upside in it, but you can't deny a company that's growing at double-digit high-teen numbers. So I suppose if you do have it in your portfolio, you probably want to hold on to it.
Very good. All right, Anthea, is that your Monday wrap?
That's it, yes.
Fantastic. What does the week have in store for you? Because last week you were very busy. Although actually the last few weeks you seem to be very busy.
I think I'm going to be busy until the end of July. We're working on a new deal, which I will let you into if we sign.
Very good. Mm. All right, that is the finest. Anthea, that is the first hour of the Gareth Cliff Show right here on the 3rd of July. Gareth is unfortunately not with us today. He has a bit of a fever, but that's fine because we're going to play Missy Elliott while he's not here.
Oh.
これからみんなでめちゃくちゃ踊って騒ごう騒ごう。Headbanger.
This is CliffCentral.com.